whose idea was it for to do a spooky episode? Do you remember?
Yours.
Was it? I didn't mean to phrase it like that. Like, oh man, whose great idea was it? I forgot. I'm sorry. I forget who protested that it was like our second episode and that was too early to do it.
Yeah, that was bait.
And of course, it would be like, it would be way too early to do like a Halloween themed version of our theme song. That would be crazy. Could you imagine if someone did something like that?
Oh, amazing! This is so good!
Some would argue we don't have the brand identity yet to do this for the second episode, therefore making half of our episodes Halloween themed. But here we are!
Hello and welcome to Let's Learn Everything, the show where we share anything and everything interesting. Today we'll be covering a science topic, answering a question, and then hopping into a miscellaneous topic. My name is Caroline, and today I'll be covering the main topic, which will be spooky frogs.
Oh!
The voice broke like a spooky frog.
Spooky frogs? I'm very excited to learn about the spooky frogs.
There's so many, it's going to be so good.
My name is Tom, and today's question is, which spooky animal skeleton has the most bones?
Ooh.
And there's a lot more to that question than you would think.
I'm so excited.
Exciting. My name is Ella, and I'm doing today's miscellaneous topic, and I will be talking about how capitalism led to the rise of witch hunting. Woo!
Whoa!
Oh my god!
Oh, yeah! can we skip the other ones and go straight in?
No, this is great! Oh, this is so good!
I'm so excited!
We really out-spookied ourselves.
We've gone for it, yeah.
Perhaps the spookiest thing of all, capitalism.
Yeah. Exactly.
Saved for last.
Terrifying, honestly.
Oh, wonderful.
So I'm doing spooky frogs, which are, frogs have some interesting names. So that's the theme here, is frogs with dumb, spooky names. I've spoken about some of these frogs on TikTok before. We'll be diving in a bit deeper into those frogs. And I've also got an extra bonus animal at the end as well. So the first one I want to talk about is called the horror frog. Also known as the hairy frog or the wolverine frog. Any guesses for why it might be called that?
Because it looks like it has hair.
Does it look like it have, like, the wolverine sideburns? That's my guess.
I mean, you're kind of along the right lines. It definitely looks like it has hair.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it actually has hair.
That would be wild for a frog. Yeah.
That would be, yeah.
I'm gonna look at a picture.
Look it up. It's gross.
Okay.
I actually really don't like it. Are we honest?
Yeah. No, it's nasty. You're gonna like it even less at the end of this.
Oh boy.
it looks like it has hair, which is why it's sometimes called the hairy frog. That's not hair. That's hair-like structures that are made out of skin. It's filled with little arteries.
Oh!
It does this to increase its surface area, because the male frogs will hang out with their eggs for a really long period of time. So the larger the surface area is, the more oxygen they can absorb through the water.
Oh.
So it's quite smart. It just looks really gross.
Oh. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. For anybody who's not looking at a photo, it basically has these little hairs running down the side of its body. It's quite a lot. But that's not the most exciting thing about them. They do get worse. So I don't know if you know this about frogs, but some of them do have claws.
I don't know if I knew that.
This one has claws, but in a really gross way. So it's named the wolverine frog as well. It's because their claws are retractable, which is
and they're made of adamantium. Right?
No, wolverine's claws are made out of bone to start off with, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Shit. Oh, fuck, I got outnerded. Fuck. Damn
fuck
it.
You. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Thomas left.
Damn it.
No, he's back.
Oh, I shouldn't have come in with my weak, with this weak shit when I knew, when I'm here with some all-stars.
Get on my level. Come on.
Damn.
So they have these tiny little claws, which are on the hind feet only. And when the frog isn't stressed out, you can't see the claws. It's fine. They are made out of these... It's made out of little bits of bone, which are attached to the end of their toes with muscles and collagen and things like that. So when the frog gets stressed out, contracts a muscle, the muscle breaks the claw off the tip of the frog's bone. It then pierces through the frog's skin and then shows up.
Oh my god!
What is wrong with this frog?
That's like so Wolverine-like. That's like really...
Yeah. It's horrifying. And we don't entirely know what this is for. These claws are sharp enough to pierce through human skin.
Oh my god.
Oh my
They're god. Really, really sharp. We think it might be to help them fight other males whilst protecting their eggs.
Wow.
But we don't really know. It could also be protection from other species whilst they're in this really vulnerable position. So yeah, that's gross.
That's really gross.
You let off with horror frog, and I was like, how horrible can this frog
be? How horrible can a frog be?
And you were like, frogs, oh, there's actually cute. Several reasons.
It really is. It lives up to the name, honestly. It also has got some...
I will also say, horror frog is a lot more intimidating than surface area frog, which is technically what the hairs are. But I do love that
big
name
surface
also.
Surface area frog, yeah. Yeah. You hear hairy frog and you're like, oh, it's not that bad. It just looks a bit weird.
No. You're a frog, Harry.
This frog also has some cultural significance. I'm going to try and pronounce the name of this group properly. I think it's to the Bokossi people, who live on the Bokossi Mountain in Cameroon. They believe that these frogs fell from the sky, and when they are eaten, they help people with fertility issues and, like, childless couples as well.
Oh.
If anybody would like to learn a bit more about that, there are some really good papers on this. I'll make sure to make it easy to find. It's a really interesting
Boy,
read.
Howdy.
But yeah, that's the horror frog. That is my first frog of the day.
And what a frog!
Boy, God, I'm really excited for this X-Men cast of horrific frogs that we're going to have today.
It keeps going. People are really creative with their frog names. The next one's kind of cute. I do quite like this next one. It's called the Vampire Flying Frog.
Ooh.
Wow.
So, why do we think this frog's called that?
It wears a little cape, got a little teeth. It sparkles in the sunlight.
It drinks blood.
It is because it has teeth at some point during its growth.
Oh.
It's really cool.
Wait,
so,
yeah. Oh.
Can I explain to the people what the little frog looks like? It's a very cute frog.
Yes, please.
It's a very cute frog. I'll go for it, yeah.
It's small. It's orange. And it's got big orange eyes. Very big orange eyes. It's very cute. It's like one of those ones.
It's very cute.
Oh, and it's got little blue feet.
They're great.
How cute. I like it a lot.
This one's very cute. So it's found in the cloud forest in Vietnam. And these frogs have absolutely no reason to ever go on the floor ever.
What?
So you might see if you Google a photo of this, they have webbing between their toes. They literally glide from tree to tree.
No fucking way.
There are quite a few different species of flying frog, and this one's just one example of that.
There is, I can totally imagine like a slightly alternate reality where we see flying frogs like that and they become the spooky mascot as opposed to
rather than bats
or anything like that. Because the thought of just like that slimy friend just being like gliding through the trees
flying
is
through the
terrifying.
Trees, yeah. They're pretty cute, so I don't think it's the worst thing to see ever, maybe? Depends on how much you like frogs, I guess. So they also lay their eggs off the ground, which is really unusual for a frog. They lay them in little pools of water that form in tree bark.
Wow!
Yeah, and that protects them from ground-dwelling animals and predation and things like that. It's a really clever way of protecting your young. What these tadpoles do, they will hatch inside these little pools, and then they'll grow up in the pool and emerge just as a fully grown frog, ready to fly again, never needing to touch the floor, which is really cool.
It's all these phrases that I'm not used to hearing with a frog. And so it's my brain is really straining to imagine these, because you're like, they appear fully formed, they leave the nest and they fly away. And I'm like, what? I don't.
What the fuck? Yeah. These frogs are not named after their gliding abilities, as I mentioned earlier.
What?
It's because the tadpoles have tiny little black fangs.
Oh, it's so cute. Why?
What? Whoa!
What do they do with them?
Oh, we'll get on to that. So usually tadpoles have like beak-like structures, which helps them scrape things like algae off the bottom of ponds. Mm. So that's what they use that for. That's how they get their food. But I've got a little quote here from Dr. Jody Rowley, who is the scientist who basically published the paper talking about this frog and identifying the species. She refers to them as black curved hooked things. They're not really fangs. Frogs at that age don't have teeth. They're like fang-like structures. And actually, she filmed a really interesting video on the Australian Museum's YouTube channel. So if you want to learn more about this, go and check that out. It's the first time that fangs like this have been seen in tadpoles. I couldn't find anything saying that any other species had been found with this. So it could be the only frog that the tadpoles have fangs.
Wow.
Once again, it's not entirely clear why they have this. They were first described in 2010. Not a whole lot of research has gone into it since then, but they are very cool. We think it might be to help them move their food around inside the tree, inside these little pools. Because what the female frog does to feed them is will lay like unfertilized eggs, which the tadpoles will then move around. The fangs might help them slice it open as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're very cute. And also to maybe help them like hook on to the side of the tree inside these little pools and like stabilize themselves and stuff like that. We don't entirely know. These are just a few guesses, but it's very
cute. It seems just very handy to have.
To have fangs rather than munchers. Yeah.
Yeah. My theory is that they started off normal, and then as a joke, much like a podcast, they decided to be spooky, and then next thing you know, they're
just stuck with it
24/7. Yeah.
So yeah, again, if anybody wants to look at photos of that, I would recommend it. It's weird and freaky, and we love it. The next one is another one that I've spoken about before. You might remember it. It's called the pumpkin toadlet.
Yeah. No, I don't know this friend.
What? So there are 36 different species of pumpkin toadlet.
Oh my god.
Have you just Googled a photo?
So cute.
Hold on.
Oh my god, they're like tiny, tiny, tiny little. They're like the size of a thumbnail.
There we go.
Oh my god.
And they're tiny. Bright, bright orange, huge.
Yeah.
There's one that's screaming.
And large screaming mouths. We should post this picture in the show notes, because
we'll definitely have links to it.
This ridiculous screaming one is so cute. Oh, look at him.
He's so good. So they're called the pumpkin toadlet because they are bright orange. And tiny little toads. Pumpkin toadlet.
Self-explanatory.
Pretty obvious. So like poison dart frogs, their vibrant color is probably a signal to predators that these frogs are poisonous. Because, oh boy, these frogs are poisonous.
Ah, oh, dang. They are.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't, if you see one in the wild, don't touch it. It's bad. So yeah. I love this fact so much. These animals can't hear the sound of their own call because their ears are so small and underdeveloped.
What?
Wow.
This isn't the best thing about them, though. So we think the way these frogs communicate is more visual because they're brightly coloured.
Makes sense.
They also fluoresce under UV light.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's not their skin that fluoresces. It's actually their bones.
Whoa. No. Through the skin?
Yeah. Yeah. So on places like their back, where the bones are closer to the surface of the skin, it fluoresces through.
Yeah, definitely Google images of this because it's really cool.
It's absolutely fascinating.
What is it that makes them fluorescent?
We don't really know. Again, there's a lot of, we don't know. So for the species that fluoresces, we actually found that earlier this year.
Oh, wow.
So we know very little about this toad. Wow. I think it was discovered in like the summer of this year.
Should that just be a part of like all scientific research when you see an animal, just like double check, does it like UV like fluoresce?
Just shine a light over it, see what happens.
Just double check.
Oh yeah, did you, there was an article from earlier this year, a bunch of marsupials, like Australian animals, like fluoresce, wombats.
What?
Squirrels. Some squirrels fluoresce.
No way.
Yeah, so it's a bunch of, yeah, some marsupials and some rodents. Wow. I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, it's obviously no one had ever thought, because they're mammals, to shine like a fluorescent. Like
One person smuggled one into a rave, next thing you know. I was going to say that hands down the horror frog was going to be the most Halloween-y frog, but you're an orange pumpkin little dude with glow bones.
Frog.
That's poisonous. That's the Halloween-y frog. Wow.
Oh, it gets better from here.
How?
So I'll just finish off this frog. Again, we don't entirely know why it fluoresces under UV light. We think it might be to communicate with each other. Looking for like a mate when you are that small is really tough. Also when you can't hear each other. So possibly these frogs might be able to see like UV spectrums.
Oh.
We know that some bird species can. So it's not a crazy thing to say that they might be able to see them. It also could be another form of like a warning that's called aposematism, for anybody who's curious, like giving a heads up to species that you are very, very, very poisonous. If a bird can see the animal and see how fluorescent it is.
Right.
It might be a really good deterrent.
Whoa.
So there's, again, a few reasons why it might glow. It could be both of those reasons.
Wow. I bet birds swoop in. They're like, that's spooky. Not touching that. You got glow bones.
I don't want
that.
No. Or also might think, like, because some birds can fluoresce as well. Like, oh, it's just a bit of bird. I don't want that.
Or they see it, they're like, it's a walking skeleton because they just see the skeleton.
They're like, oh, no, don't want that. That's gross. That's spooky.
Gross and spooky.
So you've seen how small this frog is. I didn't write down how small this frog is, but it's not the world's smallest frog.
I saw one picture like next to a thumb that seemed pretty small. Yeah,
they're small, but they're not the smallest frog. The smallest frog is 7 millimeters long, which is not 0.27 inches.
What?
Frogs get small. I'm going to change the order that I wrote these in because I actually want to talk about the biggest frog that has ever existed next.
Yes.
Oh my brain. I feel the frog region of my brain growing so much.
Oh yeah. So the next one I want to talk about, this is a frog that is no longer alive. This is the devil frog.
By no longer alive, do you mean extinct?
Yes, so it was alive during the late Cretaceous era, which is around 65 to 70 million years ago.
Oh, not because of humans.
It's not because of us, for once.
Okay, what's it called again? The devil frog?
Yes. So they inhabited the island of Madagascar during the late Cretaceous period. These fellows grew up to 16 inches long, which is bigger than this ruler.
Oh!
Wow!
That's big. They also weighed up to 10 pounds.
That's like a small dog.
yeah, that's 41 centimeters long. For anybody who's curious, they weighed 10 pounds, which is 4.5 kilograms. They were hefty chaps, and it is the biggest frog to ever have lived that we're aware of so far. These guys were little sit-and-wait predators. They were so big, they would just sit there and wait for predators to come along. they would eat just about anything. including small dinosaurs.
Oh boy.
That makes sense. Dinosaurs are like, that makes sense. Dinosaurs are just reptiles, right?
There's a lot of them.
Yeah, sure, like, pretty much, yeah. I just love saying that.
Now that would eat a tiny lizard or something. So
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I just really love saying the sentence, there's a frog that could eat dinosaurs.
Yeah, that really...
It really has a kick, doesn't it? Yeah.
It sure does.
I don't know. I'm here to provide the voice of reason, which is dinosaurs could be
very small.
Like really small. So
I also just love the phrase sit and wait predator. It's just like, yeah, listen.
It was so big you could just sit there.
I will eat you, but I'm kind of lazy.
Yeah.
Like those spiders that live in holes.
Yeah.
Though they're fucking terrifying is what they are. They're like tiny hole spiders, and they have like little trap doors on their nest, and then
they're called trap door spiders.
Oh, is that what they're called? That's terrifying. Yeah. Sorry, go on about
don't worry anyone though. Those spiders can only get to like a few centimeters big.
A few meters big?
A few centimeters.
A spider ate a dinosaur?
Oh my god.
Click here to find out.
World's biggest spider?
Did the aliens bring this spider?
Can this be the name of this week's podcast? Really clickbaited.
A spider ate a dinosaur.
Can a spider eat dinosaurs? Yeah. just another little fun fact about this spider. Another little fun fact about this frog, even, the thing that I'm talking about today. Its jaw was potentially powerful enough to bite through a human finger.
Wow.
So, think about that.
Ah, I'm just visualizing it. Wild. Nope. My opinion, I'm okay with these fellows not being around. I would like to see them, but.
Would like to see a beach ball sized frog, but also really like my fingers.
Imagine a bunch of them. That's the
just
worst.
Just hanging out together? Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
And then
they all turn
to look at you and they're like, We could buy all 10 of your fingers at once.
Your poor hands. Oh, no. So, yeah, that's the devil frog, or the devil's frog. Big, scary, can bite through your fingers.
You know what? Aptly named.
Yeah.
Good name.
Terrifying. The next one is another one that I've talked about online before. It's called the zombie frog.
Why? Hey, everyone. Hey, Evolution. We need to have a little talk. I see you found a favorite with which you've, like, gotten away with it. Because, like, I guess they live in, like, weird environments. We're not checking out frogs so much. But just letting you know, we're gonna crack down a little bit now on this.
We're really gonna one go. Yeah, yeah. This frog, again, is a newly discovered species. It was discovered in July of this year.
God. How are they still finding frogs? Where is it?
In the Amazon rainforest. So, which is where we're finding most of our amphibian
species. So it's just incredibly... dense with species, and then
research team that were like out looking for frogs, they found I think 3 new species of frog just on this one trip, basically.
Wow, that's honestly amazing. Can I just describe to you, the listeners, what the frog looks like? I don't know why it's called a zombie frog. It doesn't look particularly zombie-like. It doesn't look like a frog either, though.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Never mind. I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah,
it's got like a little beak. I can describe it as. It's a dull orange, and it's got like a weird elongated nose, like a little anteater nose, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's really odd. It's really quite strange.
Wow.
And it's like got orange freckles.
Yeah.
And little tiny black beady eyes.
It's kind of, it's gross. I think there's another frog species which is very similar to it. It's called the purple frog, maybe, and that's got a very similar body to it. So weird.
I've never seen something like this.
They look like little aliens.
Okay, yeah, the purple frog as well looks like a mole.
That's exactly what it is. They look like moles. Yeah.
They've got like, oh, and they've got like tiny little white noses. I actually like the purple frog. I think it's kind of...
Ella, I swear to God, I typed in purple frog and I saw pictures and I was like, oh, I accidentally just typed in mole. But I didn't. That's actually what they look like. Oh my God.
Okay, tell us more about the The zombie.
Yes.
Yes. So it was discovered by a man named Raphael Ernst. I hope I'm pronouncing your surname correctly, Raphael. He was doing his PhD in the Amazon rainforest when he heard the call of a frog that he'd never heard before. He was like, what the fuck
wow.
is that?
Dude can literally identify individual frog
calls. Yeah, he has frog Shazam in his brain.
This man's smart, okay?
Wow.
This man knows his frogs.
That's like literally a scene in a movie to be like, wait a second. I've never heard that sound before.
It gets more dramatic because at that point, he literally dropped down onto the floor and started digging into the mud to try and find this frog.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, he found this frog and he called it the zombie frog. He didn't name the frog after the characteristics of the frog. Apparently, he named it after how the team looked after they'd finished digging in the mud because they looked like zombies because they were so gross and muddy.
That's very good. So this is a maligned frog. It could be a really nice frog.
And we've just given it the most awful name.
Justice for the zombie frog.
Oh, poor frog. This is what did you say his name was? Raphael. I think you've made a bad call here.
Come on, Raphael. Do better next time.
I think you were projecting a little.
Yes, I agree.
Final bits about this frog. They're about 1.5 inches long, so they're not very big. They're quite small frogs. They are small and nocturnal. They live mostly underground. And the males will emit their calls like just after heavy rain, which is why it was so muddy for the team. Mm. And that can make it really, really difficult to find them. This is the problem we have with a lot of frog species now, is lots of them live in burrows under the ground. And we're just like, unless they make a noise, we're just not going to know they're there.
Wow. Wow.
So this is my final frog for the day. I've got one bonus animal after this.
Yes.
But this one's called the Freddy Krueger frog.
Okay. Evolution and scientists, come on in here real quick. We just want to talk. This is a little intervention.
It's also known as Budget's frog, so it does have a normal name as well. Scientists weren't that mean to the frog.
Oh no.
Oh, Ella.
Oh no.
Oh.
Oh no. That's not
this
good.
This one's. It's not a good look, is it?
Shall I describe the frog to the people?
Do it.
Yeah, so it's wearing a black and red shirt. It's got a hat on.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? That's actually pretty accurate now that I think about it. It's got a claw hand thing.
Okay.
It's starred in a few movies.
Right.
Sorry.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, you're very funny. Okay, the Freddy Krueger frog. It's got, first of all, the prominent feature I would say is it looks like it has one single tooth in the middle of its mouth, which I actually find
it does.
Very...
It does.
It's quite flat. It's green. It's got a huge, wide mouth.
Its mouth takes up to one third of its body. It's
huge. Just
is its
this...
head.
And it's just very... It looks slimy. Like, I've never seen such a characteristically slimy
listening.
Frog.
Yeah.
Is this not the It's Wednesday, My Dude's frog?
Yes. Yes. Or it's at least the same family of frogs. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. A celebrity.
And there's a picture I've just seen of it on Google Images with a smaller frog sitting on its head, which is lovely.
It is quite cute. Yeah. Yeah.
It has like quite bug eyes, like they're like sticking out in different directions. It looks like, and it looks happy, which I don't like. Like in a sinister way.
It's just rude of the frog. Yeah. How dare it be happy? Ugh.
To be so slimy and so happy. No, I'm envious. I'm just jealous.
Just living its best life, and we're here shitting on it.
No. No, axolotls. Very cute. Very cute.
This is
tiny
true.
Little smiley mouths. Always tiny, unsinister, friendly smile. This frog, sinister, large, I'm going to eat you smile.
I mean, Yeah, that's pretty accurate for what this frog
sort of
does.
Chaotic evil on the alignment chart.
Exactly.
It's another sit and wait predator. So it will just sit there and wait for its prey to come along and then chomp it. It's pretty gross.
What does it eat?
Not gonna lie. Anything it can, really. Other frogs, each other.
They eat each other.
Small bugs. Yeah, most frogs are cannibalistic.
Oh.
Hate to ruin frogs for everyone. Yeah, I literally have a line here saying, did I mention that Freddy Krueger frogs are cannibals as well as carnivores? So...
Lovely.
They're really nice. Yeah, they're really friendly.
I don't even think Freddy Krueger was a cannibal.
I don't think...
That's one step above.
Although this frog looks... I think has been less misaligned by its name. I don't think it does look like Freddy Krueger. So...
Yeah.
Why is it called this?
I think it's mostly because it chomps and holds on to its prey.
Oh.
In a quite nasty way. It also does make an awful sound, which I did send a clip to Tom.
Oh, yes. I do. I... For context... there's like a big chunk of time between when we recorded the first episode and this episode, or like a relatively, it's been a handful of weeks.
Yeah, it's been a bit, yeah.
And I had forgotten that I said to send me audio this way, and so you sent me a message that was just like, I thought it was like a spam call, because it said like episode 2 audio, and I was like, we haven't recorded episode 2 yet, and then it was just this MP3 file, and then I played it, and I was like... I was so shocked, and I was like, what is this like a screamer email? Like, I was so confused, and I was like, oh, right, I forgot we're
there
supposed to do this.
Go.
So,
yeah.
All right, here it is.
I love it. I actually really love it. I actually makes me like it a lot.
That's horrific.
I really like it.
That's like you took...
Why am I crying?
Can we hear it again?
We were all just like mouths agape, just in pure... Okay, yeah, here we go. One more. This is legitimate. That is a horror movie monster sound.
Yeah.
Legitimately. Yeah.
I really like it. I don't think it's bad at all. I don't think it's scary. I really like it. I think it's cute.
Are you going to rescind your statement about the smile being evil? You think it's
no,
a good sound?
Are you taking it back now?
It's really ugly. The frog is really ugly. But that sound is like, for some reason, I find really cute. I can't explain it.
I can't either. But listen, I'm not gonna yuck your yum. Good for that, yeah. I think it sounds like you're submerging a baby doll underwater as it's becoming sentient. And that's what it sounds like to me. I don't know.
It's awful. It's just like awful.
My conspiracy theory is that it's called the Freddy Krueger frog because the scientists who discovered it had horrific nightmares about it for the rest of their dreams. And so it would appear to them in their dreams.
Oh my God.
And then chomp on them.
Oh, I love it so much. So yeah, that's the Freddy Krueger frog. I do have some more awful facts about it. These little guys, so they'll live in temporary pools, and when those pools dry up, they will dig into the mud using like their hind legs are quite shovel-like.
Oh.
They will then stay in there for months at a time, and this hard shell will form around them. Made out of the months of unshed skin that have been developing around them. Yeah.
Gross, man.
So yeah, that's how they stay alive during the long dry season. The first rains will then come along and moisten this skin, making it easier for them to escape from it, basically. which is where they will then like go and rush to breed. The female frogs will lay up to 1,400 eggs at a time.
Oh my God.
And this is also where the cannibalism comes in, because the tadpoles have these like adult-like jaws. Their jaws are massive. Yeah, and they'll just swallow their siblings whole, basically, as they grow.
Oh, yes. Why?
Ew, no. That's the Freddy Krueger frog, everyone.
I love it. I love it.
It's great. It's so great, right?
It's really horrible.
That's so much. That's so much.
Just before we move on to an next animal, just look at this video I sent you.
Okay. Why does this person own one? Like, it's in their goddamn table-ass table. No. Ooh, no.
I love them so much.
Look at him moving away. He's like, oh. Leave him alone.
He just wants to be alone, okay? He looks like, you know, when people, like, eat... It's like octopuses, where they chop their heads off fresh, then put them on a plate, and then pour soy sauce over them, and they go all tense and gross. That's what it looks like.
Oh, Ella. Ella, why did you give me that
video?
Why did you share that video? Oh my gosh. What a little dude.
What a little champ. They're so cute. They wouldn't hurt a fly.
Well, except they would.
They'd hurt each other, but not a fly.
I think they would quite literally hurt a fly.
So yeah, those are my frogs for the day. But I do have, this possibly is one of my favorite animals ever. This was suggested by Ngals on Discord. If you'd like to also put your input into the video, into the podcast episodes, do go and check that out. It's great.
You can find a link to it at letsleareverythingpod.com. Ding.
Woo! Absolutely professional plug. Well done.
Thanks.
Really just snuck that in there, you know? So the final animal I want to talk about is called the vampire squid.
Ooh.
Ooh. Its scientific name, I'm going to absolutely butcher this now, I haven't practiced it enough, is Vampire Teethus Infernalis.
Vampire Teethus. Right. Scientists are dumb.
Yes. We could do a whole podcast episode just talking about the dumb names that scientists have given to other animals. It's awful. We have too much spare time, I think. So that scientific name, again, too much spare time on their hands, literally translates to vampire squid from hell.
Nice.
Yeah, God. It's fun. So it's not a very big squid. It's about 15 centimeters long. Around each of its arms, it has this sort of webbing. It kind of looks like a cape, which is one of the reasons why it's called the vampire squid.
Oh.
So when it's disturbed or when it's scared, the squid will invert its cape around itself.
Wow.
At which point, displaying some quite large spines that line each of its arms.
Oh, that's great.
It's fleshy spines, also known as Ciri, C-I-R-R-I, maybe.
Oh my god, I saw a picture of it. Oh god.
And when it's doing this, it looks quite intimidating. Just a little bit, just a tad intimidating, you know?
It is quite, like, you wouldn't want to encounter it in the water. It is. What's the fear of the deep ocean? Yes, there's like a word for it, right?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Thalassophobia, I think.
Yeah, thalassophobia. This is the kind of thing.
Have that information off the top of your head.
Oh, it's because I have it. That's why I know it. There's also a subreddit that has a lot of stuff that'll give you the heebie-jeebies.
But this is the kind of like creature that people with thalassophobia, yep, I imagine, would, you know, think about in their nightmares.
I hate how from the outside it even has like these cute little like big Dumbo ears.
It's really sweet.
And then it's secretly, oh man.
I would like to sort of bring everybody back to the cuteness, because this squid's pretty harmless. It's not predatory in the sense that like it'll go out and hunt things. It feeds on food particles that float through the water.
Aww.
Yeah, and the food will stick to it, and then it'll munch it up. So yeah, these guys are harmless. They don't want to hurt you. They just want to be left alone.
Oh, that's okay then. All right, well then,
yeah.
That's fair.
Then we should leave them alone and stop looking
We
at
should
them.
not touch them. So yeah, that's it. Those are my spooky frogs and squid for the week. What
I
do we
really
think?
I did not expect... I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe like a little frog that does like a little spooky something. I was not expecting such horror from all of these frogs.
I love it.
Frogs can be awful, basically. This is why I like them so much.
They're just doing their best.
They're trying to live their best life, and scientists are here giving them awful names.
Slander. Yeah. Libel and slander. So, today's question is, which animal has the most bones in its spooky skeleton?
I could tell you who it's not. It's not the pug.
Oh my god.
Oh, for context, God. Everybody, Noodle has no bones today. No bones.
Oh,
it's a no bones day.
It's a no bones
day. Hopefully, when y'all are listening to this, it's a bones day. That's my wish for all y'all.
We really hope you have a great bones day, everyone.
a happy bones day to all who observe.
And if you don't go on TikTok, then what? How did you find this podcast? Please let us know.
For those who don't know, Noodles is a pug on TikTok who seemingly has no bones. Anyway, I will let y'all give it a guess first. Which animal has the most bones in its skeleton?
Okay, can we have a discussion? You know, a back and forth?
Sure, yeah.
Let's have a think.
Yeah.
So, I have bones and I'm quite scary.
Is it the baby version of an animal?
Oh yeah, that's good.
So that's a really interesting guess, because for some animals there is a fusion of bones that happens when you
human babies have more bones because their skulls, when you come out, your whole skull compresses.
Yeah.
Well, gross. Because human body, we say that the human body has what, 206?
Great bones? Guess. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Thank you.
Wow.
But that changes literally your entire life. Not just when you reach adulthood. Your bones are still fusing.
I did not know
that.
When
you become old too. So old people will have less bones than us, who have less bones than babies.
Whoa. So that is not the case with this animal. And I'll actually give y'all a few chances throughout this to guess as we sort of like narrow down, but do any of you all have any guesses right off the bat?
Okay.
I'm trying to think if it would be a big animal or a small animal.
It's going to have legs. I know that sounds obvious, but you know, snakes actually have a surprising amount of bones considering they're just one long tube. But
one worm.
But they're just spine, so it's not them.
Is it a bird? Because wings?
It's a good guess, but no.
A bat? Bats have, you know, those long finger bones.
Is it a frog?
It is not. So it is not.
Good.
Oh,
it is not. So I will tell you, it was so hard to find this answer. I really thought, like, when I came up with this, I was like, this is easy. There's going to be a Wikipedia list of all animals by number of bones. But as of recording, there isn't. There are, however, so many answers with no citations whatsoever. There's lots of sites like things like animals.mom.com, which is a real site.
Mom.
I wouldn't go there. So
it might be an animal with a tail, right?
So
sorry, I'm thinking about tails.
Yeah, yeah. These are great guesses. These are great intuitions. So
are we having a lesson in which sources are good sources?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what's happening right now?
This is another example of a bad source. On answers.com, there's a question here that asks, how many bones do giraffes have? And this is the answer. They have the same as a human, 206, period. A giraffe has 208 bones in total, period. So not even consistency sentence to sentence, let alone having a source. Like, it is garbage out there, and I could not believe this. So,
I mean, just speaking of giraffes, just for people who don't know this, they do have the same a number of bones as a human, or at least very close, because the reason their necks are long is just because their spinal bones are longer, not because they have more of them.
We'll get into it. It's really interesting. So I asked paleontologist, science communicator, friend of the show, Evelyn Vollmer on TikTok, why there's no list of all bones, like no catalog of the number of bones of animals. And she asked her friends in the field, and no one, there was no like hard reason why. We have some hypotheses that like, it's both hard to tally and also relatively unimportant, like relative to like other skeletal studies about like regions and structures, like the raw number of bones isn't like significant But it's important to me. So I dug around. I did so much research for this pointless, spooky Halloween question. And as we speak, I am working on the Wikipedia page for the list of animals by numbers of bones.
Oh my god, wow. That's incredible!
Because I found the receipts. So every number I say will have a source for it. So
that is so good.
Will the Wikipedia page for, or part of the Wikipedia page for this, be up by the time the episode is up?
Oh no, it's gonna take a lot. it's gonna take some work. So, but
will you at least reference us?
Oh yeah, it's gonna say at the top, critically acclaimed podcast, Let's Learn Everything. Perfect. on their episode titled Spiders Eat Dinosaurs. So first I learned skeletons aren't necessarily made of bones. It's a more general term that includes exoskeletons, hydroskeletons. But for the sake of the spooky season, we are limiting our scope to skeletons made of bones and not cartilage. So bones have a lot more going on in them, like nerves and blood cell generation. I read bones described as rigid organs, which is chilling.
I hate that.
Had not put those two words together ever. But most noticeably, bones, one of the reasons they're most noticeably different from cartilage is they're mineralized with calcium, which makes them a lot more rigid, and also makes them a great xylophone in a cartoon. So this takes, obviously, this takes cartilaginous fish out of the equation. It takes insects out of the equation. So does that help your guesses in any way?
Can I ask one more question? Are we counting teeth?
Ooh.
Because teeth, I thought that teeth weren't bones, but I was proven wrong. So teeth are bones. I don't think they're counted, though, in the number of bones that humans have. So
yeah, I don't believe they are. So
interesting.
From what I know, I'm happy to be proven wrong, but here's the thing. The winner is so far and above that I feel comfortable saying the name of it. Even though I haven't been able to literally count all the bones of all the animals, it's so high that I'm confident that teeth will not play a factor.
So okay, that's fair.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't think for that reason that it's like, it's not a mammal, because you know, there's a reason that mammals are, you know, roughly grouped together, and one of those reasons is bones.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like
totally
skeletal structure. So
we're gonna get into that, about sort of the mammalian bone structure. It's really interesting. So for reference, again, like Carolyn said, and I'm amazed that you pulled that number out. So adult humans have 206 bones. According to the University of Idaho, cows have 207, pigs have 216, goats have 189, horses have 205. You know, it's all relatively the same ballpark, which is pretty surprising.
I'm shocked that those numbers were all so close together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked.
Oh no. In my head, it would be
this
really
is like
different.
How, you know,
this is how we're categorized.
It's not, I mean, obviously, yeah. obviously, you know, animal classification is all bullshit anyway. Because
yes, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not in a place to describe precisely how, but I've seen many videos and read things about why it's largely just nonsense a lot of the time. But I do know from an evolutionary perspective that mammals, at least, you know, the way up. So, for example, bats is a good way to talk about it. Bats' wings are like human hands. Like, it's the same bones, basically. It's the same process of evolution. They're just like now long and weird and thin and are covered in wing, right?
Because they have two like vestigial structures on them as well, like two really small fingers, which they use for climbing, but they are like pretty useless otherwise.
So that, yeah, exactly. So they have like the five fingered hand thing, and that's very similar for all mammals, right? But the reason why I would have thought that things like goats had fewer is because they're, I can't remember what this kind of animal is called, but a hooved animal. So they're missing that part of their skeletal structure. So they won't have the finger.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So they'll have fewer, but not loads fewer.
But they also get an additional bump because of tails, which we don't have. So, I listed cows, pigs, goats, horses. This is one of the most bizarre facts I learned from this paper. Sheep only have 110 bones. That seems Wrong. That's half
Why?
As many.
Why? Where are all the sheep?
Where did the bones go?
I want to count them all because this feels like one of those like geometry puzzles where you like cut a slice out and then move it and it takes the same volume. It's like that doesn't make any sense. I believe there's tail shortening. I think there's fewer ribs. But I want to count all of them because it feels wild.
It feels weird that any animal has so few bones.
Yeah.
You know?
So one way to think about this bone count is that the hand has a lot of bones. It has 27 in it, which is that's a lot for like such a small area. But evolutionarily, hands are really advanced, which is why we don't see like 50-fingered animals, right? And like Ella was saying, there's a lot of commonality in the hand layout, even between bats and humans, and even whales have like a relatively similar hand layout. The bones are different shaped, and they function differently, but it stayed roughly the same because it's so, you know, and this is sort of like a loose phrase, but like it evolutionarily complex. Like it takes a lot of evolutionary change to change the hand structure. So also, do we have any more guesses? Because I can say also that the sperm whale only has 184 bones.
My next guess was going to be whale, honestly.
The Asian elephant has 282 bones, which is quite a lot.
And you're saying that the animal in question has like far exceeded this.
Yeah.
This is making me reasonably confident that it's definitely not a mammal, okay?
Yes.
Mm.
So
I feel like if it's going to be anything, it's going to be a reptile. That feels right to me.
Oh!
I'm not going to guess, but something I said earlier, I'm pretty confident now I'm wrong.
Okay, so instead of thinking of this from a bone counting perspective, let's think of this from a bone making perspective. So let's put on our Evo Devo hat, or evolutionary developmental biology. And so this is one of my favorite topics because it's like, you know, the study of how two cells can multiply and become an immensely complex organism and how evolution affects that. And I love it because it's basically the intersection of engineering and biology. So it's like it ticks, you know, checks off both things in my brain. So if I were evolution trying to hack an animal to win this most bones superlative, how would I do it? Like what
the bone part, wars.
The bone
wars. The animal bone wars.
What part of development has the biggest opening? And I like to think of this in two parts. A, what's the bone that is the most evolutionarily basic, unlike a hand? And I know that's sort of like a loose loose term, but also what what is the bone that is the most like a Lego, that when you're developing, you can just like in the factory that is the body that makes the body, what is something that you could just like bop 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 bop? And the answer for the bone is vertebrae.
Yeah,
which are the bones that make up the spinal cord. I think Ella
I want to sneak in now and guess and be like, is it a crocodile?
Oh, that would be cool. Well, to be fair, they have, are their tails like an extension of their like vertebrae? Because that's what tails are, right?
Yeah, they are.
That's
yeah.
what I would think. Yeah, yeah.
Those are the caudal vertebrae are the tails. Yeah.
Everything you said is making me go back and think about what I was talking about before, where I said yep. that snakes are just one long vertebrate, right? They're just a long spine, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you said, the reason some of these animals have more bones than us, mammals, is because of their tails. And I was like, oh, well, those are vertebrae. So that's an extension. I was like, well, if a snake, unlike giraffes, which have yep. really long vertebrae, which is the same size spine as us, I know that snakes have more of those vertebrates, which because they have to make very, if they're making very precise movements with the, yeah. the sway of their body, then they have to be like, you know, it has to, it's like a toy.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost. Yeah.
You get those toys that like you can move them and it's like each individual hinge allows it to be smooth in its movement, right? So the more of those you have, the smoother the movement. So I would assume that some kind of snake has a lot of vertebrae to allow it to move very smoothly, and I would have to assume it was a very long snake. So like whatever that huge big snake is in the Amazon that eats people or something like that, right?
Yes. Is that well, so to go back to sort of the Evo Devo reason why this is the case, animals with spinal cords are one of the earliest categories of animals, right? It's the phylum Chordata. It's present extremely early on in embryonic development, and they have the potential to stack. So when we think about which animals have the most vertebrae, humans have 33. In lizards, it's around 65. And this is a quote from Joost Woltering, who we're going to hear a lot from. Snakes have greater than 300 vertebrae.
Whoa, okay. That's crazy. If I thought you would say it was a snake, but I thought it'd be like, oh, like 100 maybe.
Yep. Yeah,
like
yeah,
over 300. That's like,
oh my God,
10 times the number of just vertebrae.
So a study in 2009 from Woltering et al. Found that the corn snake has 309 vertebrae, 462 ribs, so over 771 bones.
Okay.
Holy shit.
Snakes have ribs?
Yeah. So the upper segment of them
They're not just one long... Why did I think they were just like one long vertebrae?
I mean, I don't interact with snakes a lot, but when you think about it, well, and so it's a section of them do have ribs, which is also interesting because, and we'll get into that, but the Burmese python at the Florida Museum has 872 ribs and vertebrae, which is four times as many bones as a human or most other mammals for that matter.
That's crazy.
So this is far and above the number of bones I've seen anywhere else. I'm open to being wrong. Please let me know if you know another answer. But snakes seem to be far and away the winner here. Most bones, baby. Give it up for snakes.
Woo! Go snakes!
Woo! It's a bones day.
it's a bones day. So what's most interesting isn't just that they have this many bones, but how they have this many bones. So a lot of this info is from a stellar article from Joost Woltering in Current Genomics called From Lizards to Snakes, Behind the Evolution of an Extreme Body Plan.
Love that. Yeah.
So when a vertebrate is developing, you know, just a handful of days in, these groups of cells called somites are formed, and they will become the layout of the spine of the animal. They're just like, you know, like a bunch of cells. And the structure that generates somites is bigger and faster in a snake. And in the article, they say, as long as the rate of somite formation and tail bud extension are in equilibrium, somatogenesis could hypothetically continue indefinitely.
Wow.
Which is terrifying, but also really interesting. So this is a quote from Rommel and Reynolds in a textbook chapter on skeletons. The total number of vertebrae, excluding the caudal vertebrae, which are in the tail, so it's basically excluding tail bones, is surprisingly close to 30 in most mammals. So mammal vertebrae have standard regions with names that attach to like really specific and totally different parts of the body, like the cervical vertebrae attached to the head, you know, the thoracic have ribs, the lumbar, the sacral, and, you know, the caudal vertebrae of the tail. And so what this means is that, like Ella mentioned earlier, the giraffes have the same number of cervical vertebrae in their neck as humans and as mice, which is just 7, and they're just longer and bigger. So going back to Woltering, they say, it is, however, not only elongation that marks these species, which is snakes. Because of its uniformity, the lack of landmark structures such as limbs and pelvis, and the absence of clear vertebral specialization in the precaudal region, this type of body plan is often described as being deregionalized. And that has been my favorite word I've learned all month, that their body plan has become deregionalized. So it's not just that like each of these 300 vertebrae has like a specific design that has a function. They're still broad regions to them, but in general, they've become uniform and deregionalized. So they've literally become like Lego-ified, which is fascinating.
That's so cool.
While this may seem just like a one-off wonder of evolution that, you know, just rolled the dice and this happened one time, there are a number of species of what are known as legless lizards that are long and snake-like. They look just like a snake. They're deregionalized, but they evolved entirely separately from snakes. like animals becoming snake shaped has happened multiple times. So they this is just like a useful thing to do.
Whoa.
So I've always been curious about this. You know, snakes have always been sort of a bizarrety in nature, and simultaneously now they make a lot more sense, and also are a lot more incredible. But most importantly, they win the Halloween yearbook superlative of most bones in, most bones in their skeleton. So congrats, snakes.
Woo!
And I would just like Caroline and Tom and all of our listeners to know that if you were afraid of skeletons, it's too late. There's already one inside of you.
Oh no, the call's coming from inside the house.
Oh, I want to know so much more about bones now.
They're wild.
I do want to add, this is just a fun fact to add at the end. I studied evolution, well, mostly just human developmental biology.
Oh, right.
Some level of evolutionary developmental biology in that as part of my undergraduate degree. And so somites, where the vertebrae arise from, somites also give rise to many other things in the body, including some of your innervation. And the reason, and your skin, okay, and some areas of your skin. So, but the way, the bits of your skin that come from one somite don't align to the nerves that come from the same somite. So the reason why you get referred pain is because your innervation for one area is actually innervating another areas of skin as well. So like, this is a huge oversimplification, but for example, heart attacks, in pain in your arm.
Oh, yeah.
And why you like feel like your kidneys in your back, or your diaphragm in your shoulder, is because of like the way innervation has arisen from your somites.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
That is a very fun fact. I like that.
I do have one extra bonus bone fact I couldn't cram in there that I learned. This is sometimes a common fact, but I learned this, that so antlers are bones that shed and regrow, and horns are bones that are covered in keratin, but they don't grow, they stay for the whole life of the animal. And there's a really great mnemonic to remember. So if you got antlers, you're gonna need a new pair of pantlers. If you got some horns, you keep them well worn.
Did you come up with that yourself?
That's awful.
No, a really great writer wrote that, and I found that, and they were I did. I think bad mnemonics are perhaps the most memorable.
Well,
I'm never gonna get the word pantlers out of my head.
That's every season, now. You need to get a new pair of pantlers. You gotta grow out your antlers. Get new antlers.
Can this be like our first bit of merch? Just stickers with antler the word pants. Pantler and some underwear on it? Yeah.
Would a deer wear pants on their antlers like this or like this?
Oh, I hate it so much.
We're going viral. This is the viral episode.
So if antlers had pants. Does that mean the ends should have shoes? And if so, how many pairs of shoes would an
antler
have?
We can't do this. We can't.
No.
Does an antler have just one shoe each, or does each bit have a different shoe? This is what I've been thinking about for days now.
This is the art we need to see.
I'm disengaging from this conversation.
And now we'll move on to Ella, who's going to talk about capitalism. Woo!
The scariest spooky thing of all.
Ooh.
Thanks, Caroline. So today, miscellaneous topic, as next to me, my cat licks his own asshole, is quite aptly how the rise of capitalism might have been the impetus for the persecution of women as witches. So, aka,
so
how capitalism led to witch hunting. It's a very interesting topic, and mostly, I guess, I mean, like any history kind of theories, is just speculated on because it's
a huge topic.
So this information, in fact, pretty much all of it, comes from that I'm using today, at least, comes from Sylvia Federici, and her book, Witches, Witch Hunting and Women, which is a series of essays which expands on her earlier work, Caliban and the Witch, and covers all this good, tasty capitalism and witches stuff. So the first half of these essays is an exploration about how the transition from feudalism to capitalism led to the demonization of women and execution of tens of thousands of women across Europe under the guise of witchcraft. This is such a light topic to end on after spooky frogs and bones. I'm like, yeah, executions.
I mean, it really is. It really is the spookiest topic.
Yeah, it really is. I want to stress that this is a very simplified and condensed version of this idea.
Yeah.
And if it sounds interesting to anyone listening, and you'd like to hear it, particularly about modern witchcraft accusations in developing nations, which are thought to be driven by some of the same factors, particularly in colonized countries, then I recommend reading the essays because they expand on it a bit more. So, moving on. In a feudalistic society, for those who don't know, lords owned land, tenants lived and worked on the land in a mostly self-sufficient, like agrarian communities called manors. So this is mostly in Europe. I don't think this was an American thing. I doubt it would have been because it was post. Yeah, capitalism was already a thing. I don't know. I'm not going to start getting into history of, yeah, this is a European thing. And very heavily in Britain as well at the time. So, tenants paid for the land either through labor or money. And under feudalism, women, they certainly weren't equal to men. But, and I'm not going to get into all of that here, but they were able to do things that were taken away from them on living under a capitalist society. For example, they could work. Labor was still divided by gender, but women did things like tend to livestock and plant food and harvest, which is like unheard of under capitalism.
Right.
Alcohol brewing was also seen as a woman's job during feudal times.
Interesting.
I thought that was really interesting. And that obviously becomes a very like male orientated job afterwards. Mm-hmm. And they could own land in some cases or be tenants of the land. And they could inherit the land from their husbands when widowed. So they were much more cared for under this system, I suppose. Now, often when they were widowed or elderly, women would continue to support themselves after their husbands' deaths through practicing things like herbal medicine, midwifery, or practicing abortions for other women. And this is where this kind of stereotype of an elderly evil witch comes in. These women who worked alone and provided for themselves had some degree of financial and sexual agency. And this is a problem under an emerging capitalist culture.
God damn it.
It sucks because I was just like, oh, hell yeah, I love that.
I love this.
I love that for them.
Yeah, it sounds, obviously, there were still issues, but it sounds pretty good. It sounds much better than where it went afterwards. So this kind of early emerging capitalist culture is something that Marx calls primitive accumulation. This is the idea as land begins to become enclosed. So you had like these, you know, these big manors, this under this feudalist system, lots of open land, people just kind of tending to the land openly. Then it starts becoming closed and sold off and owned more individually by people. So land was started to become enclosed, resources became privatized, and men became wage laborers. And this society required two things of women: stay at home and look after the household, and produce children who will also become wage laborers. In this system, they couldn't have, as Federici called them, the heretic, the healer, the disobedient wife, the woman who dared to live alone, the woman who poisoned the master's food and inspired the slaves to revolt.
What a line.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is that couldn't be allowed under this system. So some historians have said that witch hunting is the result of the superstitions of a dying feudal society, which probably did play into it in some degree. But in her essays, Federici, I think very convincingly, argues that branding these type of women as witches and torturing or executing them was a way of shaping the new working class, particularly when it came to controlling reproductive rights. It gets a lot deeper than this, but I'm not going to get into like really nitty gritty stuff because it just gets very depressing. I think this is a super interesting topic, and people should definitely look into it more. I will just give one last bit of information, which I think is like a really good really interesting and tangible way to show how women were controlled in the Middle Ages. It's not necessarily directly related to witches, but it's something that we can still see today, which is I think is quite interesting. And that's in the origin and evolution of the word gossip.
Oh, what?
So, yeah. So gossip comes from the Old English word godsib, which means godparent, a role which would have often been given to close friends and particularly close female friends. And so over time, it became quite naturally to mean close female friends, and was important. It was like the idea of having women having friendships and communicating with each other to gossip.
Yeah.
To talk with close friends, to be and communicate with close friends. So around the time of the transition from feudalism to capitalism, it ended up becoming an indicator of idle talk and spreading rumors.
Very quickly,
the shift happened, much quicker than it would in, I guess, language normally. Not language now. Language shifts very quickly now, but without the internet.
Without the internet to change so quickly.
Yeah.
And of course, this title was mostly given to women. So being a gossip became punishable by torture and public humiliation. And you might be aware of something called the Scold's Bridle or the Witch's Bridle, which was used particularly in England and Scotland. I don't know about the rest of Europe. It's, mate, Caroline and I probably know this because I feel like you end up seeing these things like hung up on walls in castles when you go and visit.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Okay, so the Scold's or Witch's Bridle. So it does come back to witches. It was a torture device used in Britain. Against people who were labeled as gossips or basically just people who talk too much, people they thought talked too much. It was really stupid, really trivial bullshit. And it's a mask, it's a contraption, a metal mask with a muzzle that has a mouthpiece in it. So it goes, like, it flattens, it sometimes has a spike on it and it presses flat against the tongue and it basically just stops the wearer from talking. And of course, this was used overwhelmingly on women. It's pretty dark.
Is this the first time you're hearing about something like this, Tom?
I do not know what this is. Yeah.
Oh
man, maybe one day no, that might be too dark. Maybe next Halloween I'll talk about medieval torture devices.
Ooh.
Those things get dark.
Real dark, real quickly. Yeah.
But that's so, so interesting. And it really makes the sort of, because it almost, it makes the fact that, you know, quote unquote, people believed in witches so much more, makes so much more sense, right? Yeah. It reminds me a lot of, you know, one of the like theses from the podcast You're Wrong About, which is one of my favorites, is, you know, examining like what, as a society, what are the things that we don't need evidence to believe, and sort of like reexamining why it is that we feel that way. And it's like, maybe it's because there is a sort of patriarchal anxiety that happens when people have this power that suddenly you're able to project that into fear. That's wild.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I definitely recommend if you can deal with the kind of heavy topic and quite academic nature of the reading these essays. It's not something I would normally read, but I was so interested by the idea that that capitalism and witchcraft were connected in this way. I think something I do find interesting now is obviously the idea of Wicca, being Wiccan calling yourself a witch, practicing witchcraft is growing among like young women. And I certainly don't have an issue with that. I think whatever you feel connected to, you should do.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to remember, based on this kind of history, that a lot of these women were just persecuted for being women in an independent way. You know, yeah. It wasn't anything to do with...
They weren't practicing a religion.
Yes, it wasn't. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, maybe some of them were caught for that reason. Not that that justifies anything, of course, but it's just by existing in... women today, just by existing in your womanly way, you are already being a witch.
Wow.
I hate society, basically.
Yeah, I think what this all comes back to is down with capitalism.
Yeah, yeah.
That and should be our like... sign-off for the podcast. Yeah. Every Well, I'm Tom, and see you next week. Down with capitalism.
Does he have any plugs or shout outs?
I do have a shout out actually this week. I want to shout out Massive Manatee for leaving our first podcast review on iTunes on Apple Podcasts.
If you've managed to listen this far, please leave a review. It helps the podcast out so much.
And we appreciate it a lot. But also for myself to plug, I am Tom Lum Person on everywhere. Like, follow, subscribe, smash that like button, baby. Yeah.
I am Big Science Energy, just on TikTok, and I am unavailable most other platforms. Smash that pod button, baby. If anyone listening lives in London or around London, I am going to be doing a kind of science-themed stand-up on the 17th of November at a pub near King's Cross. The details of which specifically will be on my Twitter, which is at Ella Hubber.
Awesome.
That is so
I'll
cool.
I'll fly out to that. I won't fly out to that. I'm sorry.
I am caroline.roper.art on TikTok and Instagram. And I'm Caroline the Bug on Twitter. Also check out our website, which is letslearneverythingpod.com.
Yeah, we have all the links to our socials there also.
And if you have anything interesting to tell us about anything we talked about on the podcast today, or any corrections, then you can email them to us at letslearneverythingpod@gmail.com.
You can also share your thoughts on the Discord server, which you can find on the website as well. That's it. Cool. So, to recap, today we learned about very spooky frogs. We've learned that snakes need to stop.
I need to calm down.
Snakes need to, like, stop that, you know? And we learnt about capitalism and witchcraft. And next week, we'll learn about everything.
Let's Learn Everything is independently produced and hosted by Ella Hubber, Tom Lum, and Caroline Roper. Editing and music by the spooky and talented Tom Lum.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, fuck you.
Perfect.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm not expecting.
You know what we should do? We should make half of our episodes Halloween themed.
Every other, yeah, that's our promise.
Every other episode, Halloween.